are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, January 5th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, author, blogger at Ornicus, blogger at Southern Poverty Law Center, author of And Hell Followed With Her, David Neiwirth. On the remotest parts of Oregon and how they run through the heartland of the country and perhaps end with Donald Trump high atop Central Park West. Is that where he lives? Somewhere close. In New York City. Also on the program today, President Obama announces an executive order about 10 steps on how to increase gun safety in this country. On the campaign trail, another Bush fail. Multiple Bush fails.
Well, it's all part of the plan for victory, yeah.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump leads with the godly, in addition to everybody else in the Republican Party. Results are in Colorado. Free birth control radically diminishes teen birth rate and abortion rate. But that is in jeopardy. Meanwhile, net immigration on our border, below zero. Yet deportations, a wave of deportations in the past week. For those families, children, and parents who came from some of the worst violence in Central America. And we'll get to that story about Antonin Scalia. How that, you know, we can't choose a religion in this country. But yeah, religion uber alles. But not so in New Jersey, as far as the ACLU is concerned. All that and more. And we will talk more about Porter Ranch, which is increasingly becoming clear. Just a massive environmental disaster. But we will get to that as well. There one piece I wanted to talk about before we get to David. And this was just from a couple of days ago, and only because two things. The first being, of course, that we are now in the year of the election, at least the calendar year in which we will have this presidential election, and obviously for the Senate and the House as well, and some state houses, some governorships. And the New York Times had an editorial 3 days ago about Social Security. And so I couldn't help myself, folks. It's just an opportunity for me to raise a couple of issues that should be in the forefront of your mind whenever you hear the word Social Security. There's really just a couple of data points that is all you need to know in terms of where the Democratic Party should be on Social Security and where the Republican Party is on Social Security. And it's a and just the sort of the reality of the program, whether you are well into middle age like I am, or just a young one like Matt over here. Because I know Matt probably is not thinking like, what's going to, how much am I going to need my Social Security? But I can tell you, at my age, that's all I'm thinking about, Social Security.
That's, I think that's also just sort of particular to you.
That's also particular to me. So, and you've heard me say these statistics multiple times, but they're reiterated in this New York Times editorial. So I want to take the opportunity to say them again as if it was a new story. 36% of retirees, 36% of all living people over the age of 65 in this country rely on Social Security for 90% more or more of their income. So your average benefit hovers around $1,300. I would assume, I don't have the data right in front of me, but I would assume that those people probably actually get payments of less than that. If the average is $1,300 and it's a function of how much you've made during your lifetime, I would say probably the majority of that 36% actually gets smaller payments than $1,300 a month. So if Social Security is makes up about 90% of their income, their income is probably in the range of $15,000 a year, maybe $16,000 a year, and Social Security makes up 14,000 of that. These are numbers off the top of my head here. So, but what is not off the top of my head is 36% of retirees rely on Social Security for 90% or more of their income. So in other words, there's no room to cut there. 65% of retirees rely on it for more than half of their income. So if you're making $25,000 in retirement, maybe you have a small pension, maybe you had some type of insurance annuity, maybe you're working part-time, I don't know. That $1,300 a month is equivalent to more than half of your annual income. Now, of course, this is going to be more of a problem for Matt in some respects because the economy is tougher now than it was for a lot of these people. You won't have the opportunity to make as much money. Now, of course, you're in the land of milk and honey here. So, but if taxes, if the cap, and you should know by now that payroll taxes apply only to the first $118,000 a year annually. Maybe it's 118.5. Goes up a grand or so each year. $118,500 that you make over the course of, if you are fortunate enough to make that much. If you make $120,000, that $11,500, or I should say that $1,500, is not subject to Social Security taxes. If the wage ceiling had kept pace with income gains of high earners over the past couple of decades, that cap would be around $250,000. And because of the amount of income inequality we have, that tax, which used to capture or apply to 90% of income generated in this country, now applies to 81% of income generated in this country. And that's a function of how much money is concentrated in the hands of so few. If you have 10 people who are making $120,000 a year and the cap is at $118,000, you're going to capture, I don't know, 98% of that income. If you have 5 people who are making $100,000 and 3 people who are making $50,000 And the rest of that is going, or four people making 50,000, and the rest of it's going to that one person, that percentage of what you capture drops. And that's essentially the dynamic. Although actually the real dynamic is that we don't have five people making 100,000. So this is important to keep in mind when you have every Republican candidate out there saying we've got to cut Social Security, as opposed to raising the cap, removing the cap, capturing the traditional amount of income that we have captured over the years, 90% of income generated. And you're getting, it's getting there. At least with Bernie Sanders, you hear we should raise the payouts to Social Security. We should increase payments. With Hillary Clinton, you're getting we should increase the payments for those who are in the lowest income situation. Broadly speaking, the Democrats are at least moving in the right direction with this. Certainly Bernie Sanders is already there. That's just to keep in mind as we get into, we're, you know, 4 or 5 months away, 6 months away from having a sense of who the two candidates are going to be. It's quite possible we may have to wait until August in the case of the Republicans. That's, I think, when Mitt Romney will emerge from the ashes at the convention. I kid. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, David Neiwert will be joining us.
And you have never been in love until you've seen the dawn rise behind the home for the blind. We are the pretty, petty things, and you're standing on our streets where Hector was the first of the gang with a gun. And the first to do time, the first of the gang to die. Oh my, Hector was the first of the gang with a gun in his hand. And the first to do time, the first of the gang to die.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the program. David Neiwert is the author of And Hell Followed With Her. He is the proprietor of Orsinus, not Ornicus, ladies and gentlemen, Orsinus. It's not even remotely close to what I've been calling it for literally, I think, 10 years, which is no surprise, and also blogs over at the Southern Poverty Law Center. David, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
So, all right, you've been writing about, you know, this. It seems that in many respects, everything, and I, you know, I watched the new Donald Trump ad today. I watched the ad put out by Ted Cruz. And of course, the story of what's going on in Oregon is in the news. This is sort of like both ends of what I imagine nearly every bookshelf in your house looks like, right? I mean, it's covering both ends of that spectrum. Let's start in Oregon. Tell people who these guys are, you know, and what is the sort of the ideological underpinnings of these. I guess there's about 15 of them, maybe there's 20, who have basically locked themselves in a federal building in a bird reserve out in Oregon, and are, I don't know, what are they hoping to do? Take down the country from there, or what?
Yeah, well, that's sort of their big picture. That's definitely what their long-term goal is. At this point, what they really are trying to do is challenge the federal government's ownership of all these public lands out in the West. And this looked like them an opportunity to do it, mainly because, I mean, you know, all of this is supposedly under the rubric of standing up for this ranching family that was out there and got sent to prison for setting fires out on their lands that spread to public lands. And that's federal arson crime, and it comes with pretty heavy penalties. And so these guys showed up to supposedly defend the Hammond family, but the Hammond family and pretty much everybody in Burns is saying, please go away. You know, they just don't want them there. But they had they had bigger fish to fry than whatever was going on really there in Burns. And what they really are about is trying to create this showdown with the federal government over its ownership of public lands. And in that regard, they're actually in a lot of ways, what they're being is a sort of armed vigilante front for the Koch brothers. And the Kochs and a lot of other big money interests right now are financing this effort to legislatively take away federally owned public lands in the West. And these guys are sort of being the armed militia wing of that effort. So,
well, yeah, I mean, expand on that a little bit for us, because I mean, I don't think that people on one level, these guys are just, I mean, you know, I'm sorry, they're a bunch of losers and nut jobs, and you know, that's just the reality of it. And you know, they're excited about their weapons and their, you know, trying to prove, I guess, their bona fides by finding the most remote location they can to occupy, you know, but the ideology that they're coming from is at least part of that is mainstreamed in the Republican Party.
That's correct. And it has been quite pointedly so, really, ever since the rise of the Tea Party. But actually, I've been writing for some time about how these ideas from the very far, far right have been getting mainstreamed by mainstream conservatives for the last 15 years. And that was what my book, The Eliminationists, How Hate Talk Radicalized the American Right, really was focused on. Was how there's been this steady flow of ideas from the Christian patriot, sovereign citizen movement. It's been steadily flowing into mainstream conservative thought for quite some time. And it really started becoming massively so in beginning in 2009 with the rise of the Tea Party. And it's become acutely so in the last 2 years, especially, you know, I mean, groups like the Oath Keepers, these guys are just flat out same. You go to their meetings and it's just like the militia meetings I went to in the 1990s. Well, and a lot of the Tea Party organizations are just like that.
Let's break that down, because there's two sort of aspects of this. I mean, there's this sort of notion of, like, I guess that the federal government shouldn't exist and we shouldn't have a government. Everything should be private property rights. And, we played one of our best ofs was an interview I did with, a conversation I did with Walter Block, who is a supposed advisor to Ron Paul and a libertarian business professor at Loyola, who, you know, had this notion of property rights that basically, you know, you got to go back to the original property rights, of course, which are determined by what the French did with their agriculture, as opposed to, let's say, the indigenous people in this country when we showed up. But let's talk about Walter Block does not have that sort of God squad quality that these guys seem to have. And my understanding is most of these guys are Mormon. But is it Mormonism? I mean, what is the, let's talk about the religious strain in here. When you talk about the Oath Keepers, I'm not sure that people know who the Oath Keepers are. The only Oath Keeper I think I've ever known was Gary Busey. And he was, I guess, punted from that organization. But tell us who the Oath Keepers are and how the strains of like Mormonism and God Squad stuff sort of enter into these would-be warriors out in Oregon.
Yeah, well, it's a tangled web, but the underlying ideology is this patriot movement, which started out originally, it was called the Christian Patriot Movement. It's very much right-wing sort of fundamentalism, but it's fundamentalism applied to the Constitution and the rules, the body of law, which means that it's highly selective and arranged in a way to tell the narrative that they want to tell. And it becomes religious in certain components of the movement, especially the Bondi folks who are heavily Mormon, and they're drawing a lot of their ideas from a guy named Cleon Skousen, who anybody who's watched Glenn Beck in the last several years is familiar with, because Cleon Skousen was this very far, far right Mormon ideologue who wrote these books that were basically sort of this revamping of posse comitatus ideology, this radical localist government ideas. You know, the posse comitatus was this very far right movement that started up in the 50s and 60s and spread into the 70s. That was all about the belief that the most powerful member of law enforcement and most powerful authority in the land was the local county sheriff, and that the federal government had zero actual power. And
these are the guys who met with Governor LaPage up in Maine too, my understanding is, right? One point LaPage was actually going to act on this information, and until his advisors had to talk him down because That's he thought right. that they could they were going to do some type of coup of the legislature based on the county sheriffs or something to that effect. Now, was this a function? Does it bleed in? I mean, there are two things that strike me about this. One is that if you are inclined to be a fundamentalist Christian, that fundamentalism as an MO can easily be applied to just about anything, right? I mean, if you think you can take that worldview and apply it to the Constitution, then all of a sudden that's like Ten Commandments, or they've been etched in stone. The other thing that occurs to me is that in terms of Mormonism, this is a religion that was born in the United States and had a lot of problems with the federal government. And so it makes sense that on some level, their religious doctrine would be directly applicable to issues like that.
Yeah, yeah. Although, you know, Mormons also believe that the Constitution was divinely inspired. So, and this is where the religious aspects get into it. And these guys all believe that their reading of the Constitution is the right one. And then at that point, religion also enters into it and stuff like that. But a lot of these guys link arms with organizations such as the Oath Keepers, who are decidedly secular and non-religious. And various other militia organizations that are also notably secular and not openly religious, but they
wait. So Oath Keepers are secular?
Oh yeah. There's nothing.
What's the oath religious. That they're taking? Is it just
to the Constitution?
Oh, okay.
They say that they're upholding. You know, they try to attract people who are either veterans or have been in law enforcement, and they're saying, you know, you're going to be still upholding your oath, even though you're no longer in the military, even though you're no longer in law enforcement, that you're still upholding your oath that you took. Oddly enough, they seem to forget that line in their oath about obeying the president. I'm not sure how that is a very selective keeping of the oath. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, you know what? Maybe I've confused oath keepers with promise keepers.
You're thinking of promise keepers. Yeah. Oath keepers are basically a militia organization that have popped up here in the last 4 or 5 years. And they're all about spreading fear of FEMA concentration camps. Their fans all listen to Alex Jones, and they're very closely aligned with the militia movement.
Well, let me correct myself. Gary Busey was never in the Oath Keepers. He was a promise keeper, and apparently, around the time that I knew him, he apparently broke his promise. And they said we would rather not have you associated with us. Now, my understanding is that the Oath Keepers are not has there been some type of break between them and these Bundy folks, and yes. What is the nature of that? Is it ideological or political or what?
Yeah, it's strategic. The Oath Keepers and the Three Percenters, who are a very closely aligned militia group with the Oath Keepers, were all present at the Bundy Ranch in April of 2014, and they made up the bulk of those supporters who were out there, including people who were pointing guns at federal agents. And they originally showed up in Burns as supporters for the rally that was held on Sunday in support of the Hammonds. But what happened immediately after the rally was that the Bundy group then went to this bird refuge and took it over. And and the Oath Keepers and the Three Percenters have all said, we want no part of that. And so they've disavowed the people who are have taken over the bird refuge.
And who are the Three Percenters?
Three Percenters are another militia / patriot type organization. They're closely aligned with the Oath Keepers.
Where does the 3% come from?
They have this meme that they've worked out where that they claim that only 3% of the people who were actually in the colonies in 1776 participated in the revolution, and that basically they're a militia that looks forward to the second American Revolution, of which they are going to be the 3% that fights and wins the revolution.
So they take inspiration from the fact that there were so few people involved in the actual first revolution. My sense is they're probably closer to 0.0003%. Or 0.0003%.
Yeah. I think that's pretty accurate. But interestingly enough, now these guys, and especially the group that went over there to Oregon to originally do this rally on Sunday, a lot of them have been very heavily involved in Idaho in the effort to keep out the Syrian refugees. They've been very prominent in leading these public rallies. They had a big public rally in Boise on November 1st, supposedly protesting, or it was out to protest the presence of Syrian refugees in the Idaho refugee program. And then 3 weeks later, they also showed up as counter protesters at a rally that was designed to support the refugees. So these guys have been very active, and a number of them I know showed up in Burns. And one of the guys from that group I know was standing next to Ammon Bundy yesterday at the ranch or at his press conference. And this guy is a particular character. You remember all the photos from the Bundy Ranch of the guy laying down on the freeway pavement and aiming his sniper rifle at federal agents. This gentleman is named Eric E.J. Parker, and he lives there in Blaine County, Idaho. he's a member of the Idaho 3%ers. He was standing right there next to Ammon Bundy at that press conference. So I
want to pivot to the question of race, but before we do that, I've noticed that Ted Cruz and particularly Cruz, I think, is it's most sort of striking, or that the Republican candidates have distanced themselves from these guys. Does the Oath Keepers and the 3%ers basically saying we're not part of this, does that give them the sort of the oxygen and the legitimacy to maintain their nut job, forgive me, bona fides, and still sort of say, like, we're not part of those 18 guys or whoever it is up there? Okay. Is that basically the calculation? Like, as long as the Oath Keepers are not with them, we can still be right with all the would-be militia people?
Yeah, sure. No, I mean, and that's the amusing thing about groups like the Oath Keepers is that they claim they're going to be out there protecting citizens and that they have all this civic mindedness, but they have zero accountability when it comes to this kind of stuff. You remember a lot of the Oath Keepers showed up at military recruiting offices immediately after the attacks in Chattanooga, and they were came out, you know, it was just these civilians showing up with their AR-15s strapped to their backs, walking in front of these offices that were typically out in, like, mini malls, you know. Mm-hmm. And at one of these, one in Massachusetts, one of the Oath Keepers who showed up to defend our military people dropped his AR-15 and it fired off a couple, three rounds. And
it's just signaling that this is not a soft target.
And Stuart Rhodes, the leader of the Oath Keepers, immediately went to work and found out that the guy really wasn't a member of the Oath Keepers and said, he's not one of us. So therefore, we have no responsibility for this.
Right. Yeah. Liberal infiltrator.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably a member of the Black Panthers. Right. And let's talk about race. I mean, I want to talk about race. How much of does this intersect with race? I mean, clearly on an anti-immigration perspective, and obviously it's, you know, we can't let the Syrian refugees in because they could be terrorists. I mean, there's at least these sort of like these fig leaves here, right?
Right.
And we know what happened when Clive and Bundy actually had the opportunity to explain to everybody his perspective on the world and on America and the Negroes. How much of this is driving this? I mean, because my sense is, like, when these guys want to give the land back to the people, it's a pretty narrow subset of the people, it seems to me, they want to give it to.
Yeah. No, it's always white folks. You know, I would say that race underlies most right-wing extremism. But a lot of layers get thrown on top of race so that it's hard to really dig through and find it. But, yeah, I think at your bottom line is a lot of these people are what they really hate the federal government for is giving away welfare money to those people,
right,
those brown people. What they really hate, when they're mad at the federal government, it's for taking taxes away from people like them, hardworking taxpayers. You know, that's who they, you know, when they, you, hardworking taxpayers is a nice euphemism for white folks. And these guys use it all the time.
Wait, so, but place this in the context of, I mean, are we spending, or explain to us why we're not spending too much time talking about these, you know, whatever, these 20, and again, you know, with all due respect, guys, if you're listening out there, if they haven't cut your power out yet, I just think these guys are just a bunch of losers. They don't seem to be as brave as they claim to be. I mean, you know, why don't they, you know, they could, as far as I'm concerned, they could just take a garbage scow and go 10 miles off the coast of the country and do the same thing, set up their libertarian free paradise or whatever it is, and it would have the same amount of impact that they're doing now. But I know you got to go in a minute, I guess. But put this into the broader context. I mean, is it my imagination, or does this stuff only come up when we have a Democratic administration? I mean, honestly, because I mean, I remember all this stuff happening during the Clinton administration too.
That's right.
But not so much during the Bush administration. So I mean, is this like when they say they're the tip of the spear? Are they just sort of like what the Koch brothers, you know, sort of create this environment, and then there's an encouragement of like, yeah, pull the Overton window, you know, way to the right, you know, by doing this crazy stuff, and you know, we'll satiate this impetus. We'll scratch this itch when we get into in charge of things.
Oh, I think that's exactly the calculus. I think that this stuff gets encouraged by very much corporate entities, people with a lot of money. And that role is overlooked. And I think Fox News plays a huge role in this, in moving that Overton window. But it's not just Fox. It's all of these talk radio stations. It's all of the right-wing media, all of which is pretty well financed by right-wing corporations. So, you know, the underpinning is, there's a lot of money flowing through, and it's, you know, it's very toxic, and it basically creates this Frankenstein monster like Donald Trump that, suddenly here's somebody that's tapping into all this right-wing populist sentiment that they've been brewing up in their cauldron, and they don't know how to control it now. It's wildly raging out of control. And the level of xenophobia and fear-mongering and hate-mongering that are being stirred out of this whole phenomenon is just incredible. And it's really bad for the country. It's really bad for both sides. You know, it's not just it's not just conservatives and liberals who are being hurt by this. It's everybody.
David Nauert, thank you so much for your time. Always a pleasure. Well, always disturbing to talk to you, but nevertheless, a pleasure, too. Thanks so much.
You betcha, Sam.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks. Before we head into the fun half of the program, just this update on... So, Matt, is your family involved in the 3%ers? Is that right?
No, I don't have any family involved in the 3%.
Okay. I wasn't sure. 6%?
If you get up to like 12%.
12%? Okay. Oh, just like, I mean, there's not that many people.
So they're pretty moderate.
Out in the Dakotas, right? Yeah. I mean, you know.
I like the new rhythm on the show, son. I think the Majority Report's breaking in new well with the new cast. We got to go take over Bird Center now, so I'll call you later.
All right, let's talk about these guys taking over this Bird Center, right? I mean, and we keep hearing, you know, the NRA, of course, they love this stuff because this is what they've been talking about, right? We've got to arm ourselves to fight off tyranny. Now, I guess they're attacking the tyranny of bird sanctuaries by taking literally a bird sanctuary. So The Guardian writes in a piece today that they are starting their third day at the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. Apparently, The Guardian was up there, and reporters from The Guardian were up there. The federal government, I think it's the federal government, has been responding via the U.S. Park Service, I should say, and in liaison with the FBI. And apparently, according to a government official, not quite clear what agency they're from, their understanding is that the Park Service is going to cut off the electricity to the building, then they'll cut off the phone service, and then they'll block off the roads. And then these survivalists will get the opportunity to play survival. Now, as of 10:30 p.m. on Monday, reached by phone, Eamon Bundy said, we're ready and waiting if the power should be shut down. So maybe they thought enough to bring a generator and some gas. I don't know how much they would have brought, but he said repeatedly that the group is prepared for the long haul. However, during a tour of the site earlier in the day, the Guardian was shown a food storage room. And this is what the Guardian observed was there. A cardboard box of apples and oranges. Now, I don't know much about oranges, but I can tell you in terms of apples, if it's cold enough, they keep them outside. They'll keep for a while, but they start to get mealy. And it really sort of depends on what kind of apple it is. But a full box for 15 guys, I mean, I suppose that could last like a month. A few dozen pots of instant ramen. So if each guy gets one ramen a day, they could last for 3 or 4 days. 24 cans of chicken noodle soup. Oh my God. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt that they got the 16-ounce cans. A similar number of cans of sweet corn, peas, beans, and chili. Those beans are going to come in handy. That would be the big one I would go for. And then 20 boxes of macaroni and cheese. So these guys are going to be eating like my 10-year-old and my 2.5-year-old for a while. There was also 3 sacks of potatoes, 1 bag of flour. I guess the idea would be like they're going to make latkes. And another bag of rolled oats, boxes of raisins, and a single bag of pretzels, and 1 lonely granola bar.
So just to note, yesterday in my satire of the request for foods, I noted granola bars.
Well, granola bar would
have
been smart
to get
thing.
Out there. They only have one.
You know, that seems like
you gotta
an
get on the ball, guys.
Like they couldn't have stopped at like the gas station.
I
on
feel
the way
like, you
said, like you know what? We're gonna take that whole box of granola bars.
I feel like you know before you're like. Little League game, or you going to school? Like, don't you get granola bars all set when you take Milo on a school trip or
exactly.
something?
Exactly.
That's pretty baseline stuff.
This is baseline stuff. Now, it could be like they all got up to the bird sanctuary and were like, dude, you were supposed to buy the granola bars. But it really just seems to be, I don't know.
I think they might have to do a vegetarian Mondays.
That's right. We should know, I guess apparently they have a name, Citizens for Constitutional Freedom. And I wonder if constitutional as in like the actual Constitution, or they're talking about like sort of freeing their body from food in some way. So there
if they can do that, I say we give them another chance.
That's right.
If they've freed their bodies of the need for food, maybe we give them the public lands to set fires on.
Maybe.
Or whatever it is they need.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure exactly what they're looking for, but they're definitely after those birds. So, all right.
All of those foods. This is not a survivalist type of. This is. I don't know. I'm not a survivalist in any. I mean, that's ridiculous to even think about, but. It's pretty clear, even from the 5 minutes I've watched of a show on TV.
Well, you know, this is the problem, Kelly, and I think this is, you know, something that people really should be a little more sensitive to. I don't want to get all politically correct here, but just because these guys are freedom lovers and they're in a militia does not mean they're necessarily survivalists. So maybe we should just check.
Right.
We should maybe just check our prejudices
privilege.
At the door.
Oh, okay.
And just say, like, why should we, you know, immediately sort of prejudge them as survivalists when they're just in a militia.
Right.
I think it's very essentializing and otherizing to make that assumption that because I'm a militiaman, I'm a survivalist.
I feel
that there is a lack of safe
thing.
Space around me
hey,
when
man,
you say that.
Just because I'm in a militia.
And I experience that as a triggering event. So before you exercise your privilege like that, at least issue a warning.
Hey, man, just because I'm in a militia, all right? Like, you know, a lot of militias rely on their leadership. This is just a leadership failure. It's not my failure as a survivalist. That was not what I signed up for. I signed up to fight the U.S. government, not to have to figure out, you know, freeze-dried food.
Now, I'm going to create a safe space for myself to draw on some crayons, look at some old Lone Ranger pictures or something to settle myself emotionally after I've been violated by your bigoted assumptions.
I wonder how many bullets they have to food.
We got a lot of bullets. We are oppressed by these exotic birds.
And you know, in a real militia situation, you'd have supply and support teams, and we don't have that here.
There you go. There you go.
Again, spoken like a real pro, Matt.
It's just water and beef jerky. You just get a ton of water and beef jerky, and you just, that's...
You know what it sounds like to me?
I feel like you...
I'll tell you what it's like. These rugged individualists, they're not putting it all in the storeroom. Like, I bet you a bunch of these guys have their own granola bars in their own pockets.
Right.
And that's what really hurts, is that if these guys can't stick together... If they're hoarding their own granola bars or their bag of nuts or whatever it is that they got, you know, a bunch of these guys no doubt grabbed, like, I'm getting some cashews. And if there's not, I'm just going to put them in my own coat. They probably all walking around with, like, coats just full of stuff like this. This is like one of, like, the bad players
cashews
on Survivor
are a little
or something.
Elitist.
If they can't come together while they take over the federal government land, if they can't work together, there's no hope for us.
Well,
we're not going to survive.
That's one of those problems.
That's a Glenn Beck moment right there.
Exactly.
Everybody's hoarding their own nuts. And I just feel like it's not going to be enough to overcome the tyranny that they have for us. And I fear for my children.
My children are going to have to live with the idea of bird sanctuaries existing. And so I don't want to live in that world.
So I'd like you to share my branded trail mix that I'm about to pitch you.
Right, exactly.
In about 30 seconds.
Exactly. You know, I would celebrate it so much if one of these guys, after this whole thing is over, came out with their own brand of, like, power bars or something.
What's really clear is that these punk bitches don't understand solidarity. Essential to any revolutionary movement. And the irony is I'll put them in a granola processing plant as part of their re-education programs after I'm president.
There you go. All right, we got to take a quick break, head into the the fun half. So not to say that we weren't just having some fun there. Jeb Bush, really... It's just, well, I was just saying today, like, I think Jeb Bush may actually, this, like, campaign may be historical in some respects. Like, to have somebody who was this touted and this bad,
these guys are doing militiamen, revolutionary armed insurrection better than Jeb Bush is doing a presidential run.
Yeah, there you go. And we'll play a couple of ads that, I think you'll enjoy from the presidential campaign and also from the Texas Open Carry celebration. We'll also get to outlining Obama's executive orders on these guns and hopefully Porter Ranch as well. Take a quick break. We'll be right back. 646-257-3920. Reminder, this show relies on its members to continue every day or even... once a week, even if it were. Or as a iTunes reviewer said, half of the year.
About half the year.
I'm on vacation half the year.
Don't reveal too much. I won't. Don't give up too much intel on this guy because he's cracked the code of something very complicated.
Oh, yeah, no, he's... Yeah, it's true. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY to get 10% off. Buy the Majority Report blend. And if you buy your crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. And if you don't use Amazon, we're going to have something where you can buy stuff from it, too. That should be coming by the end of the week. All right. Tomorrow I will be doing a jury duty. It will be a Michael Wednesday. See you in the fun half.